contractor was bad, charged us too much, didn't know how to keep control of that, but the market had just started going up like crazy. And I mean, it jumped in, it, our value jumped $50,000 in like 6 months.
See, so the market kind of saved you.
100%. Yeah, we ended up making like $20,000.
You're listening to The Azria Show. If you're looking for quality real estate investing information that you can trust, you've found it. Stay tuned and join the tens of thousands of members that have already benefited from Azria, your home for education, market information, support, and networking opportunities that will advance your real estate investing career.
Hello, everybody watching and listening to The Azria Show. My name is Mike Del Pre, Executive Director of The Azria Show, and we have a special guest, Mike Cordova. I'm excited because we, as you know, we have a mixture of locals, members, nationals, guests on the podcast. So Mike is an active investor here locally. So I love to see what he's going on. Every investor does something different. They experience different things locally here in the community. And being able to pick your brain and kind of see what you're experiencing, it helps other members help their business. So Mike, welcome to the Azria Show.
Thanks, Mike. Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. So like we always do, we keep it simple. Marcus Maloney's not here. He's out on business. So unfortunately, you didn't get to meet him, but I'm sure you'll see him around the community.
Sure.
So let's jump right in, man. Like, who are you? Where are you from? What's your quick background?
So yeah, Mike Cordova, originally from Southern California. Grew up, went to high school in Norco, California, if anybody knows where that's at. Horsetown, USA.
Norco.
Norco, yeah. North Corona.
Okay. All right.
So it's like 60 miles south of LA in the Inland Empire is what they call it. You know, I don't know how far back you want to go, but before real estate, I was a deputy inspector, working construction, public works. In fact, I inspected a few hospitals. But it's more quality control than anything else at that point. Some light rail stuff there in LA, near the Ram Stadium, stuff like that. And honestly, like, all the hours in traffic, you can imagine in Southern California driving 2-3 hours a day in traffic, podcasts, books on tape, Audible. Started every time I was in traffic, I was like, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah, for sure. So, man.
Plus, I have a few friends that are like more entrepreneurial. They're not the W-2 types. And started talking to them, and I'm like, we're buddies. We're not that different. Mm-hmm. Like, these guys aren't superheroes. It seems like it. So I started looking into stuff. I've always been interested in real estate. Mm-hmm. Initially, it was going to be multifamily.
Okay.
I was just going to go. I was like, going to be the next Grant Cardone. I'm going to go buy a couple $100 million worth of multifamily. Quickly realized that's going to be tough to start, and kind of reversed it down to a house flip. Didn't know really. I knew what wholesaling was, I guess, but didn't. I thought it was just sitting in front of like a dialer, calling, you know, random strangers, and it didn't seem like cold calling.
So real quick. So you're working, you're in California, you're driving in, or not, you're sitting in traffic, you're listening to podcasts, got a little bug for real estate investing while you're working, and then you just went down the Grant Cardone route, multifamily, so you know you're exploring, right, trying to figure out where do I fit, why do, because you jumped right into wholesaling really quick, so I just want to make sure I follow you. So so now you had the wholesale or the multifamily education you're looking into, so Did you count that out for some reason in the beginning?
Yeah. I think it was capital.
Okay, so big money.
Yeah, it turns out that's probably a bad way to look at it, because if you find a deal, you can find money.
Yeah.
Initially what got me attracted to it was, I think what a lot of people see is passive income.
Yeah.
And then you start to really quickly realize there's no such thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Good point.
And then you realize it is going to take some capital to build a rental portfolio or dive into multifamily. So where does that come from? The first thing that came to me was a house flip. It seems like you get in and out in a few months and you get a big check. That is true for the most part. Sometimes you take losses and there's a lot of work involved, but I just dove into house flipping and bought a house.
Real quick. So you dove in. So what kind did you get? Education? Did you go to some networking events? Like
Bigger Pockets.
Okay.
Did a lot of Bigger Pockets stuff. YouTube, obviously. And then on Bigger Pockets, I met an agent out here. I guess I could say his name, Chris Reese, a good buddy of mine still.
Okay.
And he had done some flips, and he's like, yeah, let's, he reached out to me. He's like, you're looking for flips? I said, yeah. And so we found one. We found our first flip in Tempe.
And you're in California at the time.
I was in California. Yeah.
Okay.
My sister lives out here.
Got it.
So, and I, you know, and I think initially the thought also was that Arizona is cheaper than California, which is not necessarily true. I guess overall it probably is, but yeah. So I started looking in California and Arizona at the same time. Just got traction out here first. And I think subconsciously I was kind of hoping that that would happen so that I would have a reason to move here.
Oh, so you wanted to move here beforehand?
I wanted out of California and the traffic and all that. So, and I didn't see myself being a landlord there. So, but I could here. So yeah, we did our first flip and made all the mistakes and still made some money.
So what did that look like? So you're in California, you got you have kids, wife, family, job, you got the whole thing going on. That's a big move. Like, so what did your wife and your family think? Like, hey, you listen to podcasts about real estate, now you're buying a house in another state. What are you doing?
So lucky for me, the wife has been on board. She wasn't happy in the W-2 either.
Mm-hmm.
She was a manager for Kohl's there in Riverside where we lived. And we both made good money. I mean, honestly, for a W-2s, we were pulling down a couple hundred grand a year. Most people would be very happy with that. And it wasn't about the money. It was about the fact that, like, for her, she had no holidays for like 20 years working there.
And retail, it's the busiest day probably.
Yeah, Thanksgiving, we got to be home because she's got to be at work at midnight or whatever. So it was the escape of the rat race was what it was for us.
How, for those listening, right, like me personally, one thing we always say at Ezria, you need to have the support from family, man. Like, if your spouse isn't on board, that's going to make those sacrifices a lot tougher.
Yeah. Fortunately, I can't really speak to not having a supportive spouse, but
that's great.
I can only imagine it'd be tough. Because it's tough as it is. You know, I mean, as a team, we work together.
Mm-hmm.
We're both full-time in the business. She's a realtor. I'm not.
Did she start doing real estate and as an agent in California before here?
No.
Okay, so
just recently got her license a few months ago.
So I'll slow down a little bit. So now, hey, everyone, I got a deal in Arizona with someone I met online, an agent I met online, found me a deal.
Yep.
So when it came to analyzing the deal, how'd you know it was a good deal? Or I don't even know if it was.
Yeah, YouTube helped with that. My buddy Chris had done some flips, the one that ended up, he was our agent.
Helping you out.
He acted as our buyer's agent. He helped me run the numbers. And yeah, I think I had like a Bigger Pockets flip calculator because you get that with like the pro member.
Yeah.
And then just kind of common sense. Like we could sell it for this much. That's probably the hardest part. Like I wasn't sure the value. I didn't know the area. So Chris helped me with that, my buddy Chris, and then just worked it backwards.
So how important is it to have an investor-friendly agent?
Huge, especially starting out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some things that you, looking back, what are some things you're like, wow, I can't believe I leaned on him to make that decision? Is there anything?
it would be the valuation of the home. Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah, because that's where everything starts. If you get that wrong, then if you could hit all the other numbers and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. We always say do your due diligence. Like, yes, you want those investor friendly service providers and you need them to be successful, but you're writing that check. The title's in your name. The money's on the line. You got to cross reference that.
Right. Exactly. So I mean, he was huge and we still work together. I just talked to him, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. He's still doing some flips and we're hoping to do, we did one together after that. We did one a couple months later. So after that first flip,
was it a success or was it?
It was, we made all the mistakes.
Okay.
Contractor was bad, charged us too much, didn't know how to keep control of that. But the market had just started going up like crazy. And I mean, it jumped in, our value jumped $50,000 in like 6 months.
The market kind of saved you.
100%. We ended up making like $20,000. Okay. Should have been 60 on the original ARV. So if it had gone up 50 and we kept to our numbers, it would have been 130 30 or something like that.
So breaking down the deal. So yes, a lot of that happened. Mm-hmm. So that must have been what, 21?
Yeah, late 20 was when we bought it. Yeah. Okay. Finished it in 21.
So the number, he comped it, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So we already talked about that. Your agent's there to help you. You cross-reference. So it sounds like that maybe the issue in that deal, it maybe been in the contracting.
Yeah.
So you relied on, so what were the, was it the contractor, was it because he made mistakes, or did you guys under budget, or what?
Not a ton of mistakes on that one. There definitely was some mistakes, and I'm sure we didn't correctly have him just fix them. He probably charged us.
Yeah.
We worked with him on two or three more flips, and it became clear that he had a habit of kind of underbidding and then overcharging. So like, we got a contract when we first started, and this is huge. Get a contract,
mm-hmm.
Get a bid, get something written up that says, this is the number, all change orders will be, nothing will be paid for unless it's approved. And then also set a timeline. Like,
it's a scope of work.
Yeah. And if it's not done by this point, then I usually charge the contractor my daily interest after a certain grace period.
Great point. Thanks for sharing that, man. Like, that's so huge, because especially when you're new, you're scared to ruffle the feathers, right? Or you're like, hey, man, yep. Let's just do this like a team, yeah. Right?
And you feel like the guy's got your back, which maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but ultimately he's going to do what's best for him.
Yeah.
And so if something happens and he can get you to pay for it, he's going to. Makes sense. So you just have to have that kind of healthy tension of, no, I'm not paying for that, or, you know, let's split it or something like that. Whereas when I first started, like you said, I didn't want to ruffle the feathers.
Mm-hmm.
I figured he knew better than me. And so when he would say, hey, we're doing this, that, and the other thing, I'd say, okay. And then I get a bill, and it's like, oh, well, that seems like a lot, but I just, okay, just keep going, just keep going, just keep going. And then they keep coming in, and you know, my wife can tell you, she's like we're sitting on the couch after work and I'm just paying invoices. She's like, how much are you paying? I'm like, I don't know. We just got to get it done.
Good stuff. And this is stuff I like to hear, man. Like, that's the people, like, you know, we're talking about being on social media. You don't hear about those little mess ups during the deal, man. Like, that's the important stuff we need to learn and understand. So the third part about, there's a lot more to a deal. So we talked about the comping, the renovations of it. And how do you think your offer was on that deal? Looking back?
When purchasing
the acquisition price.
I'm not sure that you're ever going to get a deal that good again. It was a good deal.
Cool, man.
It was, negotiating wise, I probably could have done better. But the numbers worked. For what it was, like, I would do that deal again. I think we purchased it for $395.
Mm-hmm.
It was an old church on, what's that street name? Continental. So it's like right, North Scottsdale, or Scottsdale Road,
mm-hmm.
Continental. It's like, it cuts Tempe. It's the border between Tempe and South Scottsdale.
Like Curry Road over there, mm-hmm. Or Freeway 202.
Yes. So,
yeah, nice area.
Yeah. And that's the reason that we ended up ultimately doing a lot of deals in South Scottsdale, was because the houses across the street from us were selling for like $50,000 more. And I went, oh, okay, well, maybe we should be in Scottsdale. But I got off track. Yeah, so $395 we bought it for. Probably could have done a little better. I think it had been on the market for a little bit, but the numbers worked. It was an easy transaction. I think we made an offer a little lower. They countered us like $10,000 or $15,000. We said, okay. Originally, I think the budget was 50 or 60.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up being closer to 100.
Got it.
And then the ARV was like 430 or something like that. Ended up selling it for 485.
All right. So you got, all right. So cool. So a lot of, I love it, because you're out of state. How was your windshield time?
But there was a lot of it.
A lot of driving back, flying, driving, both?
Both.
Both? Yeah. So a lot of money there. So a lot of learning. Right? Mm-hmm. But like, that's one thing. It's like, you got to get out. You got to get off the YouTube. You got to get off the books. And you're not getting off of them. But at some point, you got to be doing what you did. That's a big leap, man. So congratulations. So you're going back and forth from California. You're doing your first deal. You made $20,000.
Yep.
All right.
I didn't even know that, though, by the way. My bookkeeping was so atrocious that I was like, I think we made money. I don't know. There's more money here than there was when we started.
So yeah, I'm not even to dive into this. So then you said you did another deal.
Yeah.
So like how many deals did you do and before you made the leap back to move to Arizona?
Oh, so we moved January 23.
Oh, so fairly recently.
So it was like three years into it before we moved out here.
Okay, so
and we stayed with the W-2s for 2 years and my wife for 1 year.
Got it. So how many deals, were they all flips?
Yeah.
So how many flips do you think you guys did in those 3 years?
So immediately after that one, it felt successful, even though it was a struggle. I felt like I had figured everything out, so we bought four back to back to back.
Okay.
Like in the next 2 months. And they all went okay. One of them we ended up holding as an Airbnb. We still have it in South Scottsdale there. And then one of them ended up being one of the biggest that we've done. It was like $100,000 profit.
So a few questions. So four back to back and keeping one and furnishing one to an Airbnb.
Right.
Where's the money coming from?
So private money, hard money. And then, you know, it was 21 when we ended up refinancing the one to be an Airbnb, got like a 3% rate. Like the rates were really great. Money was easy to get. I have the Airbnb I have a partner with, a buddy of mine. So he put up all the money. I think it was like, it ended up being, everything was like $100,000. And then now we own it together.
So like your first year or two in the business, that like you're expanding a lot. You're you're ramping up this flip business because you're learning a lot. You jumped into Airbnb.
Yeah.
So what do you owe that to? Like, because that's quick. I'm listening to podcasts. I'm in California. I'm investing. Arizona.
At the time, I can remember that was when I joined the Future Flipper Mastermind.
Okay.
With Ryan Pineda, and at that time, I was in the rookie program, and my accountability coach was Brian Davila. I'm not sure if you know him, but he was there to kind of like guide us, and we got on like weekly calls, and. This was when I went into like the pro program because I told him what I was going on. He's like, how many deals have you done? I said, I bought one, we did it. And then I bought four and he went, be careful. and I was like, uh-oh, okay.
Yeah.
I might be getting into trouble, but I should not forget what your question was.
Well, it's just like, what do you owe that to? Like that, cause some people maybe it takes some years to get their first deal or they do their first deal and they just do one at a time. There's no right or wrong. It's on you this, but to do one and then four back to back and one turns into Airbnb.
Yeah. I'm just really aggressive.
Like, yeah.
To a fault.
Okay.
Like we've lost some money because of it. Yeah. But it's what I am. So I'm always going to just push.
What do they call it? Fire, aim, ready?
Yes.
Yes. That's what we'll
ready,
call it.
Fire, aim. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good book. Yeah.
Good, man. So you just jumped right at it. So, and I think being in a program of like-minded people, having a mentor or like accountability person, did that inspire any of that movement or confidence to
seeing other people do it and then talking to them and realizing that I understood the business at a level that they did. Like I could have conversations with people that were at a much higher level with me and they would go, wow, you know a lot. And then of course getting into it and actually finding out, you know, through experience what it's really like to try to scale a flipping company, which is very difficult.
Yeah.
So ultimately those four deals took me a year to get out of. So the scaling stopped. I think within that year we bought one more and it was a random deal in Florida with my cousin.
What's so difficult? What did you find so difficult about flipping?
It was the management of the construction, completing the jobs.
And why weren't they getting completed?
Contractors are tough.
How would you handle a contractor different if you got into a flip today?
I would fire faster and hire slower.
There you go.
Yeah.
And what about communication or anything?
Yeah, that's
the scope
huge.
Of work kind of stuff we went over.
Yeah, yeah. I think at first I felt, because the idea for us was hire a general contractor. Mm-hmm. Somebody just takes care of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I think my idea was that I was just going to like get a design and hand it to him and then see him in 6 weeks. And that's not the case. Not with the guys that I worked with. So it's still, it's like a micromanagement of that team. So you get this guy to manage the project for you, but you got to manage him.
Yeah.
And set expectations, and we just didn't know enough to know like what was a good timeline for a flip. You know, how much should it cost? We had
What is a good time? Like, what did you learn? Like, I have the answer. Like, what is a timeline for you at that time, at least?
I mean, just overall, probably 6 months is our average hold time.
Got it.
Yeah.
And a lot going on there, right? You got your hard money costs, you got your utilities, you got the construction. Yep. So those listening out there, your holding costs are huge and they add up quick. You got to be able to predict days on market on these properties. How long does it take to close a loan? Yep. You got to tally all this in. Amazing, man. So you said you held the property to four properties for a year. So if we're talking 6 months, that's double. So what happened?
So the acquisition of them was a couple, 2-3 months apart. I think 3 months. So it was kind of a staggering.
That's quick, yeah. So four quick over three-month each period.
Yeah. A couple of them just went. There was problems with the house that we didn't know about. And then not only that, but like so like you have one contractor. You say, hey, I'm going to do a bunch of these. And they go, okay, I'm on board. But you don't necessarily know if they actually have the bandwidth to do all of them at the same time. And not just, you know, okay, yeah, we'll finish this one and then... Of course, they need the money from this one to do that one, and they've got other jobs going on.
Now they got four down payments from Mike.
Right. So to go finish the last six. Yeah. Yeah. So
that's true.
There was a lot of delays from him saying, well, we got to wait on this and that.
Good point.
And I'm going, okay, what do I don't know.
Yeah, you're trusting them. It's so funny. So a lot of contractors, they're taking your down payment to finish the last job, and they're just looking for the next hustle.
Yep.
And that's very common. And then, so you have multiple projects. So, of course, they're going to go, yes, I'll take on all four.
Yeah.
So what questions would you ask a contractor now to see if they're capable of taking on multiple projects? Or would you just not even ever do that again?
Well, no. So at this point, our plan is for the next flip is to just subcontract it. You know, we'll use licensed contractors for like the plumbing and the HVAC and electrical and stuff like that. But with the amount of effort and time that we have to put in, even with a general contractor, it doesn't make sense to hire a general contractor. We might as well just, we've developed relationships with several subs over the years. So now we can just bring them in piecemeal and manage it ourselves. We're already there 2-3 times a week anyways with our flips. And then eventually you get a project manager in-house. And then your question was, what question would I ask a contractor to take on those kind of jobs? Show me, I need referrals. Who have you done this for? How many jobs do you have going right now? I mean, can I take a look at your books? You know what I mean? Like,
or previous jobs, how much projects?
I think with if you can get somebody with decent referral, definitely check his license, and do a background check.
Because you go to the ROC, they have a page online. You can check their ROC number.
Yeah. So if there's no just major glaring red flags, then just get a good contract with them, and don't give him too much money up front.
There you go.
And then
love
you're
it.
Good. You're never going to get away from finding bad contractors.
Yeah.
But you can mitigate the damage that does to you.
Perfect. Well said, man. So we were talking earlier, you came to a point where you kind of got away from flipping. You have the skills to flip now, but that's not your main focus.
Right.
So why did you make that transition from fix and flipping to wholesaling? Because usually it's wholesaling to flipping.
I know.
So I love that.
It didn't even cross my mind to wholesale at first. I don't know why. Probably in my mind it was less money. It was the thought.
Okay.
Like, $5,000-$10,000 for a wholesale fee. Yeah. But in late 21, as we're like trying to get through these deals, I start cranking back into the acquisition. Like, okay, we got to find more when we get these done. I got a deal under contract, and it seemed tight to me. It was a big project. It was in Scottsdale. And so I was considering backing out of the deal. I brought on a partner who was really, really experienced, and they were kind of iffy about it. So, okay, never mind. We're in our inspection period. We'll cancel. We'll move on. I had bought a couple deals from a wholesaler, one of the big ones in town. And the guy that I worked with, one of the agents there, a good buddy of mine now, I called him up and I said, hey, what's the rules on, I don't know how to wholesale. Can you sell this for me? I have the contract. I have a couple more days on my inspection. He looked at it and he goes, oh yeah. Like, and that was when
we need some help.
Yeah. That was like in the midst of the craziness, everybody was overpaying for everything. So he goes, what do you want to make on this? Like five? I was like, yeah, better than nothing, right? Yeah. So come to find out, he wholesaled it for like $30,000 fee, and I got my five, which, okay, good enough. Yeah. If I would have known how to value that property, I would have maybe negotiated some more. But that when I got that check, like a couple weeks later, it was a wire, whatever. I was like, wow, that's interesting.
Barely did anything.
Yeah. I was like, is this legal? Am I supposed to do this? And so I was like, okay, we're going to do both. I'm going to start, continue the acquisition, put everything out to a wholesale buyers, try to build a buyer's list. Mm-hmm. And if nobody wants it, then I'll just buy it. No big deal. And so we did that and we bought a few. And then you find out that in the middle of a flip, acquisitions just grinds to a halt. Mm-hmm. You're busy making sure getting this thing to the finish line. So just recently, like 6 months ago, I was like, okay, no more flips. Not for now. I'm just focusing on wholesale. And I've done 3 or 4 wholesale transactions since then.
Great, man. Yeah. So when you're in the middle of, obviously, yeah. So it goes that in a lot of businesses. So your focus was, your acquisition stopped. You're so bogged down with everything going on with your flips.
Yep.
And you just went cold turkey straight to finish off that last flip.
Yep.
So how did you start getting into wholesaling? Like, what did you, education-wise, and how'd you jump in?
So education, when I was in the Wealthy Investor, or it used to be Future Flipper Mastermind, one of the first events I went to, I ran into a couple guys. They're called the Boakley Brothers out in Vegas.
Okay.
And my whole reason for getting into that mastermind was to learn the direct-to-seller side of the business. I had bought everything on market, and based on what you see on YouTube and stuff, like, that's the way to go. That's where you make all the money. But then I ran into the Boakley Brothers, and their whole acquisition strategy is based on MLS acquisitions, on-market stuff.
Wow.
And they're doing, I don't know what they're doing now, but they do like major, you know, high-end flips, and they do a high volume. I think the last time I checked, it was like 75 deals a year or something like that they were doing. And they're just making probably 400 or 500 MLS offers a month and following up, and it's working for them. So they wholesale some of those. And that was like a mind-blowing moment for me too, where I didn't think you could wholesale off the MLS.
Got it.
Like, an agent's not going to let you do that. I didn't even know if it was legal. You mm-hmm. know, I just didn't know. So I started following their acquisition process, and then mixed that with the agent outreach portion of like the Jamil Damjis of the world, the Astro Flipping.
So what's the agent system look like? Broad overview.
Just building the relationships
with agents. On market, making offers on market deals.
On market deals. These days it's all, I'm reaching out directly to these agents, the listing agents, on the phone. We don't send blind mm-hmm. contracts, nothing like that. I'm just trying, more importantly, for each one that I call, I'm trying to develop a relationship with that agent. I may or may not get that deal,
yeah.
But you're talking to somebody who's obviously got a listing that needs work or whatever. Odds are they'll get more.
And how do you determine what agent you're going to call?
Days on market, remarks, keywords. You can search MLS for fix-up repair.
So ones with pain points or the deal's not really moving.
Yeah.
Price drops.
Yeah. If it's, you know, I mean, if it's got days on market, 60-plus, 100-plus days on market, there's probably something going on there why they won't just lower the price to get it sold. So my job is just to call and find out what's going on.
Got it.
See if there's something I can do to help.
So you're calling the agent, building rapport, seeing how you could help, see if there's any struggle around that deal. And then you always put out an offer, or you just kind of let them know how you operate and let them
at least verbally, feedback? For the most part. Yeah. almost always put out an offer.
I'll probably be around
and
you see how they respond or how they take it. How many calls do you think you have to do to get, like, how many are you doing for your business?
So on market stuff, I probably call 3 to 5 a day.
Okay.
For the remainder of the day is spent just developing relationships and following up with the database that I already have.
Got it.
So I use Astral Blaster, the software that Jamil Damji came out with, or Andy Rong and Jamil Damji. And we send out a text campaign every morning, about 100 agents. And out of that, probably 20 of them are willing to either save my contact info via text or hop on the phone and try to develop a relationship.
So text basically says, hey, I'm a cash buyer kind of scenario.
Yeah, it's more like, hey, are you still an active realtor?
Okay.
And then yes, okay, well, great. You know, and then I jump into, you know, my company is real estate investing company here in the Valley, and I'm interested in hopping on a phone call with you. The idea is to get them on the phone as soon as possible, because you can't really develop a relationship over text.
So is it like a system where it's just like you blast out, let's say, how many did you say you do a day?
About 100 a day.
100 emails, or excuse me, texts out a day. X amount will respond. You're in there. You're in the now. You get a notification. Boom, you hop on the call for the percentage that do. And then you just, I'm assuming, hey, this is what I do. Do you have any deals like I'll look at?
Correct.
Concept. So now you got the agent online on MLS deals, scouting 3 to 5 a day. Got 100 texts a day going out to agents.
Yep.
But what else are you working on?
That's pretty much it. Since my wife got her real estate license, she will call like the cancels and the expires and stuff like that to see if there's anything there. We're just looking for anybody that's like, yes, I'm still willing to sell, and here's my problem. And if we can solve the problem, then great, we can help that person out and we'll make money off of it.
And what are some ways you would solve the problem?
So if it's like the canceled and expired list, typically a canceled listing is a listing that didn't sell because it's too high, it's high price too high.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in a lot of cases we find they're priced too high because they can't sell lower than that without coming to the closing table with money. They don't have enough equity, or something's going on that caused them, you know, they need more money than what they can get, or the realtor fees are too high or something. So in a lot of those cases, that's where you would find like a seller finance or a subject to type deal. My mortgage is too high, or the balance is too high, but it's 3%. Okay, no problem. We'll take that over. We'll get you a little bit of cash. In that case, there's no agents involved, but a lot of times there will be, and we would offer to pay that commission as well.
Love it, man. So you're doing strictly... You're making it work strictly talking to agents, and I love that. And so how about the cash buyer side? So what are you doing to build your cash buyers list?
I don't have a huge cash buyers list. I've mostly used other wholesalers to sell my deals so far.
Okay.
Everybody knows Spencer Caldwell in town. Mm-hmm. He sold a couple for me. I just did a deal with Keegley. They sold one for me. But as far as recently, I've focused on trying to build that list, and most of the buyers that I have come from the agent outreach. A lot of agents in town are also flippers or landlords or whatever. Yeah.
So what advice would you give to someone listening, an experienced investor, new investor, whatever it is, they lock up a deal, it's not moving for them because they're wholesaling, they still haven't got a strong list, or they're like your old scenario when you became a flipper, like maybe I could get rid of this, it's not working out. So, because when you see the Spencers, the Keegleys, right? So they're a big operation, right? So what are some things a wholesaler or investor should know when working with a big wholesale company?
Oh, when working with the big wholesale companies?
Like deal structure, percentage split. Like, because I know some are it's a negotiation.
Sure.
Some just want to be like, hey, can you pay me $1,500? Some are like, you want to split it? Like,
yeah, I mean, if it's your first deal, I just probably just take whatever they'll give you. You know, because you don't have a buyer. Without them, you're dead in the water. So like my first deal, I took $5,000 on a $40,000 deal or $35,000 deal. No regrets. It taught me. I was like, oh, okay. Proof of concept there. But besides that, I mean, the bigger companies seem to be the easiest to work with.
Yeah.
Their buyers typically pay more. In the scenario of Spencer Caldwell's dealing with his disposition team, it's simple. He charges them a flat fee.
Yeah.
It's like $1,500. And you keep all the money. But, you know, just it's kind of a case by case situation. If you put it out to three of the big companies, a couple small guys in town that you know, and your buyers, and you got 10 guys looking at it, you do whatever you want.
Yeah, I think it's like a great way, because even when you said when you're flipping, you're getting bogged down, yeah, and you're losing your deal flow, right? So like, right, if you are flipping or you're new to wholesaling, these local wholesale companies can be, or even smaller companies, yeah, established wholesalers, yep, just leverage them. When I started going virtual wholesaling in Cleveland, literally my first 25 deals were with another,
yeah,
wholesaler.
Yeah.
I was strictly focused on acquisitions. Then eventually I started growing my cash buyers. I started getting to the meetings,
right,
meeting people, yeah, in the groups.
Yeah. So I think there's kind of two groups on the subject of like, what do you do first? Do you find the buyers or do you find the acquire the leads? I say do both.
Yeah, if you can't, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, or focus on finding deals. Because if you find deals, everybody's going to want to talk to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, these Keegley and New Western and all these guys, they're going to reach out.
Like, you got the golden nugget. If you can, yeah, go direct to seller or whatever it is, you have a contract that has value.
Yeah.
Yes, people are going to want to move, especially in our market. It's low inventory.
Right.
People need deals. So that's gold, right?
And
so
deals that are actually deals. Yeah.
Actually deals.
Yeah.
Correct. So
yeah,
you got to know how to comp.
Yep.
We've learned, right?
Yeah.
So make them buy it right, always up front.
Right.
But then having that cash, the power of that cash, but that's one thing I learned too from those bigger companies. Like, yeah, they start tacking on these big fees on top. Mm-hmm. If you have that negotiation where it's like, hey, give me $250, and yeah, they're like, shoot, we could sell this for $290, they ain't gonna tell you.
No, and that's okay.
Yeah,
I'm not counting your pockets.
What I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
So that taught me when I first started working with other companies, like, really understand who's buying in your local market or wherever,
right,
you're wholesaling. Who are the, because, you know, those hedge funds, when they came in, took everyone, yeah, by storm, and they're paying, yeah, 100%, 90% of the deal. If you weren't paying attention to that, going to the local Asria meetings and seeing what the stats are saying,
yeah,
and who's here,
yeah,
you're going to miss out on that. So,
yeah, I kind of missed that
yeah,
train. I know a bunch of guys that sold all their deals. It was great. If the hedge funds were buying, which I think they're probably back buying a little bit now, go ahead. You're going to get smaller fees for sure, but you can do it. You can do a ton of, you can sell a deal that wasn't a deal.
Yeah.
Otherwise, as long as it fits their buy box.
Good point. Yeah. So people are kind of like how you mentioned, got saved by the market,
yep,
in a way, right? So one thing we're talking a lot about now here at Asria is be a bad flipper and make money, right? We all experience that. So, mm-hmm, I got saved. I literally probably broke even to lost some money on a deal I bought deep.
Yeah.
Like, if I didn't buy it deep and stick to the fundamentals and to,
right,
your numbers, I would have been gone on that deal. So it's like, it's everyone that rode the wave, which is fine, especially in wholesaling,
yeah,
it's sales.
Yeah.
Right. So back to the fundamentals, like the pros are here.
Right.
Right.
That we got a rude awakening in that, because we got saved on a lot of our deals. And then when the market shifted, we didn't get saved. The market wasn't there to appreciate for your mistakes. So it taught us some bad habits in acquisitions, in project management. And now we're finally learning, like, how to really comp a deal. What are other investors paying for rehabs in town? Stuff like that. So
keep going. Like, what,
yeah,
what are some of those things that what lessons, as we wind down, give us some of those lessons. You've done a lot in the last few years.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's amazing, man. So it's like, what are some lessons you could share with everyone listening that you're going into your career, right? You're going to stay in this business. And what are those tools you're going to take, those lessons?
Honestly, it's just relationships. Find somebody else that's just above you and learn from them. They'll show you. So especially like when I first got started, I would see a deal and I would talk to an agent and say, hey, what's the lowest you think I can get this for? I need a little discount here because I got to make it a profit on it. And they give you the number, and then you start like manipulating the numbers, because you can just change the numbers on the spreadsheet and make a deal out of just about anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, sure, we'll do the rehab for $10. But having somebody next to you that says, no, that's not a deal, you know, or a few people that can help you. And sometimes what you find out is it is a deal, but not the way that you thought. So it's just a matter of squadding up with everybody in town, anybody you can, and developing relationships that you can, with people that you can trust, and guide you. That's the biggest thing. Find somebody who's doing it and then just do what they did.
Yeah, beat the learning curve. Yeah. And what's the quote? Learn from someone else's mistakes, because we don't live long enough to make them ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. Meet the right people, get around real estate investors in the business locally, shake their hands, get to know them.
Yeah. Start out in wholesaling.
Yeah.
I would say.
That's how I did it.
Anybody that asked me, I want to get into real estate. Okay. Learn how to wholesale. Because that's learning how to find quality real estate deals.
How to buy a deal right.
Right.
Get a real deal under contract. And I think what I loved about wholesaling is that it forced me to think like other strategies.
Right.
You got to think like a flipper, and you learn it, and you meet those flippers, and you learn how they think. You meet the landlord, you meet the Airbnb, you meet the pad split.
Yeah.
Like, you got to get out there and learn these different strategies and how they look at deals. It's amazing.
Yeah. And just be careful with the, like, this, what is it, the shiny object syndrome?
Yes, it's out there.
And don't go to the easy exit strategy that pays more. Like, if you can lock up a bunch of deals that work as a flip, they also work as a rental. They also work as an Airbnb. Sure. They also work as a pad split. So run the numbers as a flip. And if you can get it locked up there, then, you'll sell that deal 100%.
Love it, man. So I really appreciate you being here, Mike, man. Nice getting to know you. So how do we get a hold of you? How do we get in touch with you if we want to talk to you about some deals, or what is it?
Yeah, I think the best way is just Instagram. I'm on there. Recently, I started posting a lot of videos of my phone calls that I make with agents. Some of them are funny, some of them are educational, hopefully. I think the Instagram is just Mike_Cordova1, I think.
You think? Maybe. We'll get in the show notes. Don't worry. We'll help you out there.
Double check.
We'll get it. Cool, man. So hit you up on Instagram, watch your calls, watch everything you're doing on there. So those listening, another episode of the Azria Show. It's a wrap. Head over to azria.org/calendar. Check out the events we have coming up. And Mike, hopefully we see you around an event.
Yeah, man, I gotta come out.
Yep.
Yeah, 100%.
For sure. That's a wrap.
Awesome. Thanks, dude.
Thanks for listening to the Azria Show with your hosts, Marcus Maloney and Mike Delprete. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you found this information valuable, head over to azria.org and learn more about our community.